Hi, my name is Debbie. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Debbie.
And through imperfect abstinence, I have maintained an 80-pound weight loss for 14 years. I have pictures. We in Overeaters Anonymous are always into pictures. So I will pass around pictures. And then I'm just going to jump right into my story. I like the format, the basic format, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. So that's the format I'm going to go with. What it was like, as you'll see from my pictures, I was never overweight as a child. But I was abnormal with food. I can remember at a very early age doing things like sneaking the chocolate chips out of the chocolate chip bag when my mom would buy them and putting them in my pillowcase and eating them after I went to bed. I can remember sneaking food. I can remember my grandma owned a grocery store. And I would go out into the candy case, and I would get all kinds of candy, and then I would eat it, and I would hide the wrappers in the couch cushions and behind the couch. And then I can remember when Grandma one day pulled her couch out, and she said, "Debbie, I had all kinds of wrappers behind my couch." And she was so sweet. That's all she ever said. But she knew. I can remember being ecstatic when I was really little about getting a double yolker. You know, and those of you that have been around for a while and have farm eggs, a double yolker is when you have two yolks inside your egg. And I can just remember being ecstatic about that. Food was always a high priority in my life from the time I can remember. Now, I had a good childhood. I had a very happy childhood, but I definitely had some challenges as well. I lost both of my parents when I was very young. I lost my dad when I was 10 years old and my mom when I was 13. And so I had to grow up a little faster than maybe, a lot of my friends did. My dad died of a cholesterol heart attack, and ironically, I always was scared to death that I would die of a heart attack in my 40s, because my dad was 40 years old when he died. But fear never got me into recovery. Fear, you know, all fear did as a compulsive overeater was made me eat more food to stuff down the fear. So, the more fear you have, the more food you eat, and, you know, it just gets it worse. My mom was an alcoholic. And she also smoked. She had emphysema. She died at age 44 in both of her diseases, in both of her addictions. I can remember most of the time when I would get off of school, I would walk home, or I would walk to the bar where my mom went. And after my dad died for the last 4 years, before my mom died, I would sit at the bar, and I would eat candy bars for supper, and usually 4 or 5 candy bars, and I continued that habit clear up until the day I got into OA. I usually ate at least 4 to 5 candy bars every day, so, you know, I just became sugar addicted. So I got, like I said, I grew up fast, as you can see from my pictures. I got married at age 16. And my husband, who is here, was a whole 19 years old, but I married my soulmate. And in about a week, a little over a week, we'll be married 35 years. And of course, that being against all odds, because that doesn't usually work out that way. But because we're soulmates, it worked out, and he stuck through me through thick and thin, if you know what I mean. And it wasn't until after I got married that I began to put on weight. And my weight just began to steadily increase each pregnancy, each year. You know, just go up just a little bit, go up just a little bit. It wasn't until after the birth of my third child that I even worried about my weight particularly. Until then, I just kept going up. After the birth of my third child, I began my diet cycle years. And as most of you will remember Harlan saying, I was just like Harlan. I was on the bonus plan. I joined Weight Watchers, and I lost 100 pounds, and I gained back more than that. And I joined Diet Center, and I lost almost 100 pounds, and I gained back more than that. And I'm always on the bonus set plan. And, you know, that's in addition to abusing laxatives and then all of the other, you know, fun remedies that we do, the cabbage diets, the, you know, whatever. They're not important. The thing is, they don't work. They never worked. They worked successfully for a while. I could do them for a short period of time. The problem is the time became shorter and shorter and shorter and less and less and less successful, as everybody in the room understands. So then I gave them the time when I said, okay, I give up, that's it. I can't do it anymore. I can't yo-yo, I don't care, I can't lose weight, I can't keep it up. So I just said, I love myself this way at 300 pounds. Now, that wasn't exactly true, but I really worked hard to convince myself that I was okay at that weight. The problem was, the more and more weight I gained, the more and more things I loved that I gave up. You know, you become, anybody who's been morbidly and obese knows that movement becomes harder with every pound. You know, tying your shoes becomes an ordeal. I couldn't walk from the parking lot into the building without being out of breath. You know, I was on the school board, and I would have to make sure that I would get there plenty early so that I could go from the parking lot and get there and get my breathing back before I sat down, you know, in front of the group that was there. If you didn't, you tried to sit real quietly, pretend like you wasn't having trouble breathing, which never works. Just a lot of simple things, and it happened so gradually, one simple thing at a time. You just kind of quit doing that. You quit sitting on the floor and playing with your kids. You quit. I couldn't ride the roller coaster anymore because we went to World of Fun and they couldn't, you know, hook the strap over. You know, just little by little by little. And it was so gradual. It was so gradual. But I always thought when I went to lose weight, that should happen fast. You know, okay. You know, I gained weight 1 pound at a time, but somehow I thought when I lost weight, it should come off like 6 pounds at a time. But, you know, and yeah, my life of disease. So my health was in bad repair. My triglycerides were off the charts. With a father that died of a heart attack. Not good news. Like I said, you know, just breathing was getting to be harder and harder. Sleeping, I used to take full bottles of Tums in a week, you know, trying to get rid of the heartburn so you could sleep at night. My addiction was killing me. And it's very much killing me. Now, I don't know where you'd be today without OA, and I'm not sure where I'd be. I don't know if I'd be alive or not, but I can tell you my quality of life would be very low. My quality of life would be very low. So what happened? Well, in November of 1995, I went to the doctor. I don't remember what I went to the doctor for. And I don't know if they do this in the large towns, but in the small towns, they frequently used to have preceptors. And you'd go to the doctor, and the preceptor would come in first, and, you know, they'd do your whole consultation, and you'd go through everything with them, and then the doctor would come in, and you'd go through everything again. So was at the doctor's, and this preceptor came in. She was a young woman, and she had weighed me and, you know, looked at me and took my blood pressure and everything, and she said to me, "Have you ever tried to lose weight?" And I couldn't even choke out an answer. All I could do was bawl. It was like, in my mind, you know, all these things, like, are you kidding? You know, but I couldn't say a word. All I could do was cry. So the doctor came in, and they did this nice consultation, and they fixed it. They put me on FinFin. The wonder pill at the time. And I was only on FinFin for really a relatively short time, which I'll get into later, because I was born with a leaky right heart valve. So fin-fin was never a good idea for me anyway. but you know, I went on fin-fin and I thought, okay, this is great. It's working. I started right before Thanksgiving, and it was like, oh my God, I lost weight over Thanksgiving. You know, I think that was the first time that it ever happened to me in my life. But I knew that this wasn't something a pill was going to fix. So I thought of another answer. I dug out of my closet a book that is written by an OA member. It is not an OA literature. It was written by an OA member. Many of you may recognize it. It's a red book. And my brother had sent me that book a few years earlier. And I got really pissed about the book, and I threw that sucker in the back of the closet, literally threw it. In the back of the closet, and that was the end of that book. I was not a compulsive overeater. But I was on this fin-fin. You know, I'd lost, I think, about 7 or 8 pounds, and it was like, maybe there's some kind of, like, behavior modification or something in that book that might help. So I dug the book out, and I started reading it, and I thought, God, I'm not sick like that guy is. Yeah, I just couldn't relate, you know, until I got to about the third paragraph. And then it was like, oh my God, this might be me. So I started working the steps as they're described in that book, as he worked them alone. Now, I don't know if any of you have ever noticed, but this is kind of a we program. It doesn't work real well when you do it by yourself, but it did work a little bit. And so it's kind of clicking a little bit, and I thought there might be something in these steps that, you know, maybe this will help me just a little bit. And so I was working along. I thought I was doing pretty good, and got to the fourth step. Anybody here ever try to do a fourth step by yourself? Yeah, it don't work so good. And I began to, that hopelessness began to just really come over me again. And I was really in, you know, feeling so depressed. And I thought, this is it. This is one more time. This whole thing, nothing's going to work. And it was on a Tuesday. And I picked up our local newspaper, and at that time, on the left-hand side of the newspaper, they had this little announcement columns. And there on the left-hand side of our local newspaper was a thing that said there was an OA meeting starting in Nebraska City. And I have never felt so much like a higher power was helping me than I did that day when I read that little tiny announcement. It was like that whole thing was just for me at that moment in time. It's hard for me to even describe. I get very emotional even thinking about it. But it was like, oh my God, there is help. Maybe there is hope for me after all. Now, I had tried OA before. I had driven to Plattsmouth, and this had been, probably about 5 years before that. I'd driven to Plattsmouth. And I went to a couple of OA meetings, and they scared the living daylights out of me. First of all, they were very honest. They were very self-serving. And, you know, they talked about giving up food. And I thought those were the three things in the world I could never be. So, you know, I went to about 3 or 4 meetings. There's a gal that still goes there now that tried to sponsor me a little bit, kind of tried to take me under her wing, and I just couldn't do it. But what I will tell you is we see a lot of people come in the rooms, and we see a lot of people go out of the rooms. What we don't know is whether that seed's been planted. And there was a seed planted. And so that day when I saw that, you know, that little thing, it was like that was my answer, and I knew it was my answer. So I went to the meetings in Nebraska City, and the meeting in Nebraska City was started by a local priest of the First Evangelical Church. And he started the meeting mostly for his parishioners. And so he started the meeting. I went, you know, he had a lot of recovery, was a really good thing, but unfortunately he got moved to Russia. And when he got moved to Russia, the prisoners just quit coming. And I went for 6 weeks every week and sat there by myself. And I thought, what in the hell am I going to do now? I thought I found the answer. This is one more time, you know. But I had began to get some gifts of the program. And I had even flushed my fin down the toilet. Huge leap of faith the day I did that. That was my first time I took a third step. And I, you know, was like, okay, if I'm going to try this OA thing, you know, I'm going to do this. And I flushed it down the toilet, and I lost 25 pounds on FinFin, by the way. All the rest of the weight that I've lost has been through OA, and I've maintained it off. But, and I didn't even have my FinFin anymore. It's like, oh my God, now what am I going to do? Many of us come into the rooms to OA to lose weight. And the first time I went to OA, that's what I wanted. I walked into the room and I wanted them to hand me a diet and tell me how to do it. And then I wanted to walk out of the room and be okay. And it didn't work. The second time I came to OA, when I went to that meeting in Nebraska City, I went for a different reason. I thought that day the weight was not a problem. I had magic pills. Remember? I had magic pills. And the good thing about FinFin is FinFin was what opened the door of hope for me. Because before I lost those first few pounds on FinFin, I didn't have any hope at all that it would ever change. But I walked into the doors of OA the second time needing emotional and spiritual help. Thought I had the magic pill. Weight was never going to be a problem for me again. You know, that was just going to fall off and life was going to be great. But I needed emotional and spiritual help. Because the one thing I had prayed for from the time ever since the day I got married, was I wanted to be a good wife and I wanted to be a good mother. But my family was crumbling around me. And my son was in the throes of drug and alcohol addiction. My daughter was in an abusive relationship. My youngest daughter, I just couldn't relate to. I couldn't even connect with her at all. And, you know, my family was just literally falling apart. And it was because I was literally driving them away. So I decided to go and get some emotional and some spiritual help. But you see, what I learned in OA was, the problem was, I was living life like it was all about me. It was all about me, you know. My kids' problems, it was all about me, you know. Everything was all about me, you know. They needed to do this because it was all about me, and they needed to have this appearances because it was all about me, and, you know, everything was too much all about me. And I was controlling. And I was angry. I was an explosive time bomb, and I went off regularly. Now, I was also codependent, so I would go off, and then I would apologize, and then I would explode, and then I would apologize. My son is laughing because he remembers it well. you know, and that's what I did. I did not have a clue what I was angry about. You know, so I came to OA, and I'll tell you what, I had no idea what a life-changing event that was going to be for me. No idea how much life would change working the steps. I stand here today, I am imperfect in many ways, but I am a happier, healthier, saner, gentler and kinder person today than I was then. Through step work, because this is a 12-step program, and the only way this program is going to do any good is through step work. And through step work, I learned that I was angry at God. You know, I prayed and prayed and prayed, but I had such anger and that, you know, I mean, it's no wonder nothing worked. But I uncovered a huge anger at God. I was working my fourth step, And one night I was laying in bed, and I could just, it was like I could feel my whole body shaking in anger. And I thought, I didn't know what was the matter. I went out in my living room. I ended up sitting in my living room in the middle of my floor, and I had it out with God. Now, the amazing thing is, I had it out with God, and he didn't strike me dead. Mm-hmm. And that was a real revelation for me, because, I also had a huge fear of the God of my understanding in that time. And But I had no idea that I was stuffing down all of this anger at God. Through step work, I also figured out that I was extremely angry with my mother. I was angry with her because she knew she had emphysema for 20 years, and she continued to smoke to the day she died. But I learned a really big lesson from my mother that I never learned until I got into OA, and that is not everyone gets the gift of recovery. People die in their disease every single day. And so recovery is a gift, and it needs to be treated as such. And that was a huge lesson for me. I also saw my best friend's father die in his disease of compulsive overeating, slowly and slowly and slowly being more and more and more incapacitated, where he couldn't leave the house anymore. Couldn't get off the chair anymore. Couldn't get out of bed anymore. And, he died in his disease. And so, my abstinence is imperfect, but by God, I'm here, and I'm healthy, and I'm alive. And that's a huge blessing for me. God completely relieved me of my character defect, of my temper. Now, that's the only character defect to date that he has saw the need to release me of. Not that I haven't had a lot of help with a lot of others, but I don't have that temper anymore. It's not there. I don't explode all the time. I don't feel it rising with me. I'm working with a sponsee on anger issues, and we talk about that, and it's like you can feel it coming, and when it comes, nothing you can do can keep it from coming out. It just explodes. And but I don't have a temper anymore. I don't explode like that anymore. I don't have a desire to. The anger isn't there. I worked that out through my steps. Today I can live life on life's terms. Some days are kind of hard. Problems happen and things don't go the way I like them to. And, I'm not perfect. I still, don't do things right all the time. But mostly I live a pretty balanced life. I live pretty much life on life's terms. I stay out of my children's lives today. I don't tell them what to think, how to feel, what they should feel, what they shouldn't feel, what they should have did, what they didn't do. I stay out of their lives today. And that is my daily amends that I make to them, is to stay out of their lives, is to love them unconditionally, which I had no idea what that even meant. It was in these rooms that I learned what unconditional love was. That meant loving them, even if I was pissed at them. Now, I didn't have to condone their behavior. It was also in these rooms. I never went to Al-Anon. But I had a great sponsor who really worked me through, not enabling. And so there's a difference between loving unconditionally and enabling. And I learned not to enable my children. Once in a while, I can still fall back into some of that. But overall, that's my daily amends that I live to my children. I live a daily amends to my husband. He put up with me through, like I said, through insanity, through tempers, and I have to live a daily amends to him. It's the what it is. You know, I had made many other amends that I had to make. Today, I often remind myself, in fact, every morning, two things. Number one, it's not about me. And I say that every time before I go to an OA meeting. I say that every time before I meet with a sponsee. My sponsees hear me say it all the time. it's not about me. It's not about me. Life is not about me. You know, and it's just that simple. Simple, but sometimes hard to live. The other thing that I do daily is I release the people that I love to the higher power, the same higher power that has helped me. And that's how I stay out of their lives. It's the only way I stay out of their lives. Because do I worry about them? You bet I do. Do I have pain? And, you know, when I see them in pain, you bet I do. I'm a mother. You bet I do. But it's not up to me to fix them. It's not up to me to fix their issues. You know, it's just not up to me. You know, do I worry about their health? Do I worry about everything? Sure. But I release them. As most of you know, I'm big on December 28th. All of my sponsees know that. And the amazing ability to release the people I love to the same higher power within them that is helping me. And I have to do that daily. And I don't know how to work this program without doing those things daily. I don't know how to work this program without doing a third step every day and turning my will and my life over to God. If you know a way that's easier and softer, you know, great for you, but I don't know a way. And that's what, you know, that's what I have. The other thing that I have to do is I have to give back to OA. I have received gifts that are unbelievable. And my family has received gifts that are unbelievable. Our recovery changed our entire family dynamics. You know, the son that I had to lock out of the house changed every lock on the house. That same son has... He has keys to everything we own. He is on, even on our business checking accounts as a signer. Okay, the daughter that I beat up in my own backyard gave me a Mother's Day card that talked about me being a great confidant and friend. My youngest daughter and I have a wonderful relationship today. And, you know, but recovery changed our entire family demand dynamics, and it wasn't just my recovery. But I do believe that recovery in a family grows. You change, the family changes. Recovery grows, and it changes things. Okay, so I'll get back to giving back to OA. So I've received gifts that are indescribable. So I have a responsibility. I have a responsibility to give back to OA so that other people can get gifts, and so that I can continue to get my gift. Remember, I am a very selfish individual. I have to remind myself every day that it's not about me. But I am selfish in that way. You know, I have to sponsor. I currently sponsor 5 people in the program. I have to drive to Omaha for OA. And I've did that for 13 and a half years now. And at least once a week. If I miss a Saturday, I really try to make another meeting. Sometimes I get 2, but most of the time I do just once a week. But, you know, there's a few little sacrifices I have to make. Big deal. Who cares? You know, I've served on intergroup. This year, region rep. You know, the small things I give back for so much more than I could ever even imagine happened. Today I stand before you, and I am imperfect, and I am very glad to admit that. There was a time in my life when that was the worst thing I could have said, ever. you know, imperfection was not acceptable. Everything had to go as planned. Everything needed to be the way it had to be. But you know what? I drove myself crazy. You know, I drove myself crazy, drove and drove and drove myself and everybody else around me. And today I'm proud to be imperfect. You know, it's okay. I have learned to embrace that. I love in how it works. Progress and not perfection. And when you are dealing with food as your addiction, that's pretty much the way it is. Because every day, every single day, we play in our disease. Every day we play in our substance. You know? And I love a Kidney Chesney song. It's from a while ago. And I love a line in it, a couple of lines. But the line I love the most is, "I've been there. That's why I'm here." And to me, that says it all. I've been there. I've been to food hell. You know, I've been there a number of times, and I've had some emotional, I've had some spiritual, and I've even had some small physical relapses. I've been there. That's why I'm here. You know, that's why I was here this morning at 9 o'clock to meet with a sponsor, and at 10:30 for the meeting, and I'm back here tonight. You know, I've been there. That's why I'm here. Whatever it takes. We had a leader at our OA retreat a while ago, and her name was Janet. She also has some tapes out, so I'm sure many of you have heard her. And Janet always talks about only God can quiet an addiction. Only God can quiet an addiction, and I believe that. I believe that very much. But I also believe that God will quiet your addiction if you will take 10 simple but very powerful steps. Because all the prayer in the world never did a single thing for me. All the prayer, I had to take some action. I had to do something. I had to change something. If I want, you know, somebody this morning in my group said, if you want to be a miracle, you have to, if you want to have a miracle, you have to be a miracle. You know, if you want to change, you have to change. And that's, you know, that's what it's all about for me. So, I've been there, and now I'm here. And I'm really glad that you've been on this journey with me. And I have no idea how much time I took, so.
We will now open the meeting to questions for the speaker. Please limit your questions to the speaker. Share and how he or she works the steps or uses the tools of recovery. We ask that you raise your hand and wait to ask your question when the speaker calls on you. And Debbie, do you just repeat the question so that...
Okay. And we leave that on for the recorder? The questions?
Q&A we do, and then with the sharing we'll...
Okay. Okay. Anybody have any questions? Like, you have a question.
Can you share a little bit about your food plan and how it was for you in the beginning and then how it is now? I mean, from the beginning when we first started eating everything.
Well, when I first had a food plan, I had the FinFin, and then I was kind of, I really didn't have a specified food plan for a long period of time other than I just tried to eat 3 meals a day. I could have anything or as much as I wanted. I can remember when I first had a sponsor, and I would write on my food plan in the morning, you know, I had 2 Long Johns, and, you know, at lunch I had, you know, a hamburger and fries and, you know, 3 cookies, and, you know, and amazingly, I was losing weight on that food plan. Because it was still a ton less than I was eating before. And, you know, my sponsor never condemned that food plan. Because it was working. And as long as it was working, she was okay. I kind of came up against a few walls, and you know, over the years, and we've had to tweak it and change it. Today, my main thing is I need to avoid recreational sugar. So I try to stay with sugar or with products that have 10 grams of sugar or less. The exception to that is fresh fruit. So fresh is okay. But anything else, I stay under 10 grams of sugar. Then it's eating in moderation. I kind of use some of my old Weight Watcher learning, if you wanna say that. And my rest of my food plan is just boundaries. You know, I have to have at least, you know, a fruit a day. I can't have more than three. I have to have a vegetable in the day. I can have pretty much as many vegetables as I want. I just have to can't have a bunch of crap on them, which is what I used to do. I need to keep at less than 12 ounces of protein a day, which is still a lot, but it is a massive amount less than what I used to eat. And I stay under four bread, what I call bread servings. Bread servings are any type of heavy carb. So that's my basic food plan today. So until she changes it again. any other questions? Hi, Lindsay.
I was wondering, do you define abstinence and food plan differently? And if so, what are the differences?
I do define abstinence and food plan differently. My food plan is my food plan. Abstinence is a state of being. For me, abstinence is when I'm accepting of my food plan, when I'm accepting of life. It's a state of being. I can be white knuckling it on my food plan. I don't consider that abstinent. That's dieting. Okay. Now, if I get off of my food plan, then one of the things I have learned over the years is you have consequences. You know, that's part of life, is consequences. And so if I get off of my food plan, I usually have to white knuckle it for several days. And that's acceptable, you know, to get back into my food plan. But white knuckling it all the time, that's a diet. So I define them differently. Just push the button, the red one.